We want to end today's show with a story. It's a true one, and it's about a man named Michael Mack.
Meghna, delighted to be here.
Michael lives in Boston now. He looks like he's in his early middle age, with a wiry body, long curly hair tucked behind his ears, and an intense gaze. He's the kind of man who, when he was a child, knew exactly what he wanted to be when he grew up.
I wanted to be a priest. I remember being 10 or 11 years old, just walking down the road, talking to God. It was just the most natural thing in the world for me. And praying was sweet breathing, vapor angels swimming from my lips to God. On frosty days, I saw them flash in silver robes. As a priest, praying would be my job, on call, day and night, like a phone company lineman climbing the telephone pole to Jesus. Of course I wanted to be a priest. Baptized at the Shrine of the Sacred Heart, I was thumbed by nuns through three Catholic schools, vocation written into my genes, a DNA psalm. Priests were the church's heroes, vow of poverty. Plus, eating like princes on bake sale leftovers, church mothers in potholder mittens thumping the rectory door with a warm pan of tuna melt, or brown apple Betty still in its Pyrex plate and tinfoil crown. Priests were special. Everyone knew. They had a special aroma, towed it behind from room to room, the smoky bloom of myrrh. They spoke a special language, Latin, of course. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. But even more, I was sure, a secret code learned in seminary, the sacred handshake of God.
Michael didn't grow up to be a priest, no. He joined the Air Force and then became a writer. What you just heard was an excerpt from his new play, Conversations with My Molester, A Faith Journey.
Well, the priest that I remember best is the priest who I'm talking about now. At the time, we were living in North Carolina in a small town, and my mom was at the time in a mental hospital. Had developed schizophrenia earlier. So my dad had sent us down, us four kids, down to live with his sister. My dad was in D.C. most of the month, and he was holding down a job. During the time that we were down in North Carolina, he would come down every couple of weeks. But so when he was gone, our priest was my second dad. He took me to my first basketball game. He drove me home in his gray sedan. All the kids liked him. And I felt special because he seemed to have a special liking for me.
Can you name him?
I don't name him in the play. I would rather not name him. He still has family. He is no longer living.
Well, what did he do to you?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is to read a very short poem that speaks to it in a more elliptical way, in a more lyrical way.
Please do.
You meet him again, here in the humid rectory of memory. He, the adult, wears a black short-sleeve shirt, his forearms translucent, light brush strokes of hair, the heavy bull of a watch. The soft apartment of your imagination opens again to his furnished room on the second floor. Hints of cologne and cigar, sunlight leaking onto the walls, drawn Venetian blinds. No sound but the scuffle of breath, blood beating in your ears with the pulse of a plaid green sofa. His body sinks into the cushions beside you, the pillows breathing. The furniture is speechless. You want to name this, but to say it is to put it in your mouth.
You ended up leaving North Carolina and moved away from there. Did you ever see your abuser, that priest, again?
Yes and no. Did I see him face to face? No. I had a 3-year relationship via communication or attempts at communication with him.
Michael, if I may, there's just a tiny layer of detail here which I'd like to add in regarding your story, because you had moved here to the Boston area to be a student at the Sloan School at MIT, and you had discovered that this priest didn't actually live that far away, that in fact he was in Worcester?
That's right. That was one of the biggest surprises for me, and one of the things that made me realize that this idea that I had had for so many decades of having this conversation with him was not only possible, it was just down the road.
Did he answer those letters or that knock on the door?
He didn't answer the knock on the door. He didn't answer the letter. What I'd like to suggest is that what happens in the play, I had imagined a million different ways that this conversation, this encounter might go. But what happened, I had never imagined.
You ended up going to the funeral of this priest who had molested you.
I mean, my family left the church soon after the abuse.
Why did you choose to go to his funeral?
I had to. And in fact, it was at his funeral that I went back to Mass for the first time in many years. And it was there that I felt again that mysterious beauty.
At the funeral of the man who abused you.
Yes. But there was something in the Mass, in that celebration of life and death, and the great mystery behind it all, the great mystery of being. There was something there that still called to me.
Michael Mack, why did you decide to write about your experiences in the form of a one-man play, to essentially tell about what happened to you to what could be an audience of strangers?
What I hope to find in this play about my abuser is that in the communities of people that form around it, and in the conversations that form around it, healing is what I'm seeking. Part of that encouragement comes out of, I think, the, now as a member of the Catholic Church, that we in the Church acknowledge and own the failings of the Church. I mean, I know that the Church has gone through a dramatic change in the last 10 years since the clergy sexual abuse scandal broke here in Boston. And one of the things that has happened is that priests are no longer among the elect in the way that they were when I was growing up.
In the minds of lay parishioners.
Yes. They're human beings just like us. That's one of the good things that came out of this. It's a little closer to a level playing field.
Michael Mack's new play is Conversations with My Molester, A Faith Journey. It starts tonight and runs through Sunday, January 22nd at the Boston Playwrights Theater. Michael Mack, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us.
Meghna, my pleasure.
Tomorrow marks the 100th anniversary of the Bread and Roses Strike, an explosive 8-week labor protest by mill workers in Lawrence.
Immigrant women began the strike, children forced to work in factories joined it, and ultimately Congress intervened. So we'll take a look back at this watershed moment in labor history and how it might resonate with American workers today.
That's tomorrow on Radio Boston.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.